Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Treathart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that likes nothing more than when our aural spotlight shines virtually on our resident diva, Mary Pat. Nathan and I will pay particular attention to what MP has to say this week as we consider three movies that feature women protagonists. Those characters are played respectively by Michelle Pfeiffer in French Exit, Amy Adams in The Woman in the Window, and Angelina Jolie in Those Who Wish Me Dead. Let's begin this week's show by heading for the bright lights of Paris. That's where Frances Price, the character played by Michelle Pfeiffer in French Exit, ends up, along with her son Malcolm, played by Lucas Hedges. Frances is one of those characters that the movies love, a larger-than-life woman, not that far removed from Mame Dennis or Louise Sawyer, who lives by her own rules. The difference is that Frances is running out of time, or to be specific, money, which to her amounts to pretty much being the same thing. Having existed on her late husband's money and now reduced to living in a friend's apartment after having sold everything she owns to escape New York insolvency, Frances measures what time she has left by how quickly the stacks of euros she has stashed in her closet disappear. Meanwhile, Malcolm, played by Hedges in a role similar to the one he played opposite Meryl Streep in Let Them All Talk, is stuck between mother and the woman he loves, played by Imogene Poots. Though it has a serious undertone, French Exit has its moments of humor. And if nothing else, Pfeiffer, at age 63, proves that she still is one of cinema's most glamorous stars.
It's intriguing that you point out that these are all movies with female protagonists, but they're not necessarily, to my way of thinking, all women's movies. And they certainly aren't necessarily feminist movies. And to start with French Exit, this particular story has a lot of subtle and overt messages about women's place or roles in the world. So we have so many different things going on here. Most important, we have the relationship between the Michelle Pfeiffer's character, Frances, and her adult son, Malcolm. And their relationship is sort of played out or rolled out for us in flashback, because we find out that although mother and son have been somewhat estranged, somewhere around age 12, she just shows up at his Northeastern boarding school and pulls him out unexpectedly and maybe even inexplicably. So their relationship has been such that mother and son have been intertwined now for at least 10 years, maybe to make up for the first 12 years where she seems to have been an absent presence in his life. But he, you know, is torn in this particular film between the desires of his mother to take him to Paris with her and his commitment to his quote, fiance, played by Imogene Poots, who he has not recognized publicly, let alone to his mother. So he's caught between these two women who he wants to please or wants to indulge. So that's part of the relationship aspect of the story. When they get to Paris, that's when things start to get a little wacky, because we end up with all these secondary characters who fortuitously, or I don't even know if you would characterize it as such, all this group of people comes together. And that's where the sort of zany aspect of French Exit comes in. So the humor to which Dan referred earlier does manifest itself throughout the movie, but particularly in the latter third, I guess it would be fair to say. So what's the point here? The point is that you really can't take your eyes off Michelle Pfeiffer. I mean, I think that she is a tour de force in this particular film, whether you like the character, whether you like the story, whether you agree with the introduction of the secondary characters with their sort of limited backstories. It is Michelle Pfeiffer who commands the screen throughout this entire film. And then we have the sort of death with dignity argument that's sort of lurking below the surface here. Is it legit to decide to end your life when you choose to do so? Of course, her reason for doing so, Frances's reason for doing so, seems to be that she doesn't have any more money. So is that a legit reason? I don't know. Maybe so. But I unexpectedly, or sort of surprisingly, I should say, I really enjoyed this film for a variety of reasons, but most notably because of Michelle Pfeiffer's performance.
Yeah, well, and this movie, French Exit, was written by a guy named Patrick DeWitt, who's also a novelist, and this is based on his novel. He's also known for this kind of weird revisionist Western comedy that we reviewed a few years back called The Sisters Brothers, which is another movie that kind of walks a weird line between sort of what you expect from a genre and what you absolutely don't expect from a genre. And this kind of has that similar sort of quirky weirdness, almost surreal quality to it. I mean, I was thinking of a lot of literary references while I was watching this. Like, I was thinking about John Irving. This kind of has that same kind of vibe of,
like, Cider House Rules or something.
Or World According to Garp, where you sort of have this protagonist who seems to be the only seemingly normal person in this cavalcade of quirky supporting characters that comes in. I was also thinking about The Goldfinch, the Donna Tartt novel, in the sense that it's about this kind of strange mother-son relationship. But there's also this almost like a supernatural element that's kind of riding through the whole film. I mean, there is a character who we come to believe is a witch or a psychic or a clairvoyant or a medium, what have you. And there are seances throughout this movie. I'm surprised that neither of you brought up the best character in French Exit,
right,
which is the cat.
Exactly.
And the cat, Little Frank, who supposedly is the conduit with which Michelle Pfeiffer's dead husband's spirit walks around in, voiced by Tracy Letts, who I think we'll be talking about in a later film on the show. So, I mean, I think in kind of describing all the disparate elements of this movie, it does kind of sound jumbled and confused. But for whatever reason, I mean, I was just kind of with its vibe all the way through. It's not at all what I was expecting it to be. I mean, it starts off and Michelle Pfeiffer, you know, she has this almost arch sensibility. I was thinking about Catherine O'Hara's performance on Schitt's Creek. She has that kind of vibe. There's almost like a Wes Anderson sort of erudite, eccentric.
The royalty.
Yes. The way that she talks, she has these, you know, these flourishes with which she talks.
And so I thought, mannerisms.
Absolutely. And so I thought maybe, like, she thinks she's aristocracy. And so I thought maybe it was going to be a strange oddball comedy. And then it kind of keeps redefining itself as it goes on. And the title comes to mean multiple things as it goes on. And so this is definitely not going to work for everybody. And I will admit that there were times where I wasn't sure if it was working for me. But yeah, you're right. It is just, I don't know. We see so much homogeneity in Hollywood movies that it's nice
to
see
something. We'll talk about that later.
Yes, we absolutely will talk about that later. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see something that's unexpected, that is just kind of its own thing and is on its own wavelength. And you're either going to get on it or you won't. And yeah. I guess I did, because I also liked this more than I thought I would.
What strikes me is that both of you recall the movie in different ways. And it affected me. I share all the feelings that you guys are talking about. But one of the things that struck me most about French Exit is Pfeiffer's character is one of those traditional kinds of intellectual kind of people, although she's not necessarily an intellectual, but her world is come to a point where she's just stricken by ennui and she just does not want to go on any longer. I mean, Mary Pat, you mentioned that, you know, she's going to live, and I mentioned it too, as long as her money lasts. And when that's gone, she wants to go. But the fact is that she starts giving the money away because it's like, you know, I'm just tired of this whole thing. I'm just tired of it. And I want it all to end. So there is so much to French Exit. And as you point out, Nathan, I think many people are going to find out there's so little that interests them. This is one of those movies. And I think we can all agree this. It's just going to depend upon what your reaction is to everything that you see, what's going on, because it is not your standard film in any way, shape, or form.
And going back to Michelle Pfeiffer, because this movie was sort of positioned for a while as a possible Oscar contender. She got a Golden Globe nomination for the movie. And I think she was kind of for a while there, it seemed like she'd be a shoo-in for a Best Actress nomination. I wonder if maybe people just didn't see this movie. The Oscar voters just didn't get around to it. Maybe they thought her performance was too arch or affected. And at first, it seems like it's going to be that way. But for me,
once I kind of figured out who this woman was and why she's behaving the way that she was, I totally understand why Pfeiffer played it this way. And this is one, I mean, she doesn't show up too often in movies anymore. This is one of the best performances that she's given, absolutely, maybe ever. And certainly the best performance she's given in the last decade or so.
Yeah, certainly. I don't know if it beats what she did in The Fabulous Baker Boys, but it is.
Yeah, maybe not.
It is quite a good performance. And that was French Exit. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at The Woman in the Window and Those Who Wish Me Dead. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. Back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the Michelle Pfeiffer feature, French Exit. Let's now move to The Woman in the Window and Those Who Wish Me Dead. Let's begin with a movie that has Amy Adams playing an agoraphobe. Agoraphobia, of course, is the condition in which those afflicted are afraid of situations in which they feel a lack of control. In the case of Adams's character, Anna Fox, she, for reasons we only become gradually aware of, is afraid to leave her spacious, if old and weathered, Manhattan brownstone. Yet the world keeps intruding on her, mainly in the guise of the guy, played by Wyatt Russell, who rents out her basement, but even more so by the family that lives across the street, played respectively by Gary Oldman, Jennifer Jason Leigh, and newcomer Fred Hechinger. The kind of movie that is jam full of red herrings and that delights with implausible twists. The Woman in the Window is thriller genre filmmaking at it, well, certainly not best, though not worst, but maybe just around average.
Well, that's a quote that's not going to go on the poster anytime soon. Although I feel the same way. And here we have another movie based on a book, in this case, a huge bestseller, written by a guy who goes by the name of A.J. Finn. And I would recommend anybody that doesn't know about the backstory of this novel, find the New Yorker article that was written about A.J. Finn and his bizarre series of, let's call them, fabulations that came out after the popularity of this book. It would be enough to make a compelling movie on its own. But getting back to the movie, I mean, I read the book. I know Mary Pat read the book. Neither of us could remember really what the book was about after we read it. It's one of those, like, airport novel, beach read novels that, you know, they're designed to get you through layovers, essentially. And it's paced.
Essential beach book.
Absolutely. And it's paced in such a way, it's like The Girl on the Train, which was also made into a hit film. It's paced in a way that you just keep churning through the pages and then you kind of forget everything that happened. So watching this movie, I remembered some of the twists and had forgotten others. And then once it gets to the ending, which is just absolutely ludicrous, I was like, oh yeah, I remember I thought this was BS in the book too. My problem though with the movie version of The Woman in the Window is that it's almost too buttoned up for its own good. It was directed by Joe Wright, who's made some really good stuff like Atonement. And I kind of wanted him to unleash his inner Paul Verhoeven on this movie. Like, this is trash material. It's Lifetime grade material, but it's being made by these A-list people. And I kept wanting them to just
go to 11 and make it pure camp, you know? And it all ends, I mean, and this feels like a 90s Verhoeven movie, because it's like all of those thrillers that came out in the 90s, those like the real monsters in your neighborhood thrillers that we got a lot of. It even ends on the roof of her brownstone, which just so happens to have a very rickety skylight that's conveniently there so someone can fall through it on a dark and stormy night. Yeah. It's just stupid, but it's not artfully stupid in a way that someone like Verhoeven or even Brian De Palma could have made. So yeah, I went into this hoping it would be kind of a fun, you know, sort of throwback kind of camp movie, but it's not as fun as it needs to be. And Amy Adams has given it her all, but she is getting nothing back in return. I mean, this is a one-way performance if I ever saw one.
Well, and you mentioned that it has this A-list talent, not only in terms of from the director side, but we also have Jennifer Jason Leigh. We have Julianne Moore in this film to say.
Brian Tyree Henry shows up at one point.
Right, exactly.
Anthony Mackie is in this.
Yes.
Well, and so that's part of the difficulty here is the fact that we look at Amy Adams' career. And the first thing that I remember from her, at least from a film perspective, is Junebug. And she was that was probably 15 years ago. And she was so like sort of fresh faced and innocent, you know, in that movie. And then since that time, she has played all these challenging characters. I mean, she was in Doubt, you may remember.
She was in Arrival.
Yeah, more recently.
That's my favorite. Yeah.
Elegy. But think of her in American Hustle. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see more of the American Hustle Amy Adams than the sort of down at the mouth, facing some serious behavioral issues, looking as though she's 85 years old, Amy Adams. So I hope that her next project allows her something more to do than here, where she was just sort of reacting in horror to everything that happened around her. I will put people on notice that if you're a fan of red wine, I would open at least a couple of bottles before you start watching this film, because she does indulge rather liberally in red wine.
You think?
Pills throughout. So maybe that'll be something you could have some sort of bingo going on every time.
A drinking game.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. This movie almost put me off red wine completely. She drinks so much of it.
Yeah. We began the show by talking about women's movies, and we talked about French Exit. And of course, that is a woman's movie, even though it was written by a man. The two we're dealing with in the second half, particularly Woman in the Window, that's your standard woman in peril movie. Now let's close with Those Who Wish Me Dead, which is another kind of movie altogether. Given that title, which is as obscure as it is awkward, you'd expect this Taylor Sheridan-directed film to be something original, though it clearly isn't. Angelina Jolie plays a smoke jumper with a guilt complex, which explains why she, always up for a beer with the boys, keeps engaging in self-destructive behavior, and which sets her up to be the perfect savior of a young boy, played by Finn Little, who's been targeted by two assassins, played by Aidan Gillen and Nicholas Hoult. Unlike, say, Sheridan's 2017 film Wind River, and boasting none of the quality that David McKenzie managed to make of Sheridan's script for 2016's Hell or High Water, not much unexpected occurs in Those Who Wish Me Dead. John Bernthal turns in his typically solid job as a stoic county sheriff, and the Australian-born Finn Little is effective too, but the acting otherwise is uniformly pedestrian, even from Jolie, who finds herself hampered by the limitations of a woman character shoehorned into a role that could easily have been played by a man, or as Mary Pat told me earlier, even by a robot.
Or a zombie, because why not? That would have made it more exciting. Yeah, I was really disappointed. I mean, it's kind of an action film. It's kind of a relationship film. It's kind of a personal growth film. But then it's none of those things at the same time. And in terms of Angelina Jolie's performance, fine. Nothing particularly out of the ordinary. I think the best performance in this film may have been provided by Nicholas Hoult, who was playing so against type, at least thinking back to the earlier things that he's been in, About a Boy, you know, those types of light comedic roles, because he definitely is a bad guy here. And we don't really understand all of the motivations for everything that happens, but that doesn't matter. I think the other missed opportunity here in terms of this film, Those Who Wish Me Dead, was the sort of course of dealing that Angelina Jolie has with the young boy who's played by Finn Little, because they have this connection and then they don't. And they're trying to make her be sort of this tough girl or something along those lines, but she's really not. And they just, there's no development of sort of that course of dealing between the two of them. We don't really know what's going to happen after. We don't really understand. We get a little bit of a sense of maybe where she's coming from, but we really can't appreciate fully how this relationship might have flourished if there had been a different script.
Yeah, and this movie wants to be, like you said, kind of a big, dumb action movie, but it also wants to be, as is Taylor Sheridan's want, to be sort of a, you know, straight-faced study of life in rural America and what's the real, you know, are you really in peril because a killer is chasing you or because nature is the true monster of the piece? Because it's not enough that they're being chased by these two killers, Nicholas Hoult and Aidan Gillen, but there's also a wildfire raging because you can't just have one conflict.
Talked about the fire, which right. I love fire, so I appreciated that about the movie. I was just hoping it would come closer to everyone and it would be over more quickly. You know, everyone would burn up by.
It's so silly, and I mean, the killers are supposed to be scary because they're so taciturn and businesslike as they're just blowing all these people away. But it's kind of like compounded by the fact that, I don't know, I would think that if I were an assassin and I was going after this witness and then the kid ran away, I'd just let the kid go instead of killing everyone in this damn town. Like, don't you think that's going to blow your cover? Like, you're leaving behind this trail of bodies?
Yeah, but Tyler Perry in a cameo tells them they have to go after the kid. So do you want Madea? On your tail?
Well, they clearly put that scene in there because they were like, well, no one's going to believe this. So let's get Perry on the phone. He's probably got a free afternoon.
Yeah. So that was Those Who Wish Me Dead, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinman and Murray Pat Truthart and I discussed French Exit and The Woman in the Window. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarbert for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from the actress turned filmmaker, Betty Thomas. It's perfectly okay to write romantic comedies, action flicks, epics, dramas, or horror stories as a man or woman, at whatever age and as whatever ethnicity. It's okay to write anything you want, as long as you're passionate about it. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.